Facebook.com/VOA1. The hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Mario Ritter Jr. has a report on a recent court ruling that concerns American women's reproductive rights. Faith Perlow presents this week's Everyday Grammar Report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
A federal appeals court ruled late Wednesday that the abortion drug mifepristone may still be used in the United States for now, with some restrictions. Abortion is a process that ends a woman's pregnancy. One restriction requires visiting a doctor in person to receive the drug. Another restriction limits the drug's use to the first 7 weeks of pregnancy, down from the current 10 weeks. The Food and Drug Administration, FDA, approved the drug mifepristone 23 years ago. In 2016, the agency expanded the use to 10 weeks and permitted sending it to women by mail. Medical experts say millions of women have used the drug to end their pregnancies in combination with a second drug, misoprostol. The appeals court decision narrowed a ruling by a lower court judge in Texas. That ruling suspended the FDA's approval of the drug. Preventing the drug from being sent by mail means there is a limit on the most used method of abortion in the U.S. Alliance Defending Freedom, the group that brought the Texas legal case against the drug, called the federal appeals court decision a victory. The group was also involved in the U.S. Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade to end the constitutional right to abortion last year. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland said in a statement that the Biden administration strongly disagrees with the appeals court decision. We will be seeking emergency relief from the Supreme Court to defend the FDA's scientific judgment and protect Americans' access to safe and effective reproductive care, he said. The latest abortion dispute started last Friday with conflicting court decisions in the states of Texas and Oregon. In Texas, U.S. District Judge Matthew Kaczmarek ordered a hold on FDA approval for mifepristone last Friday. The order came after anti-abortion groups claimed that the FDA used an improper process when it approved mifepristone in 2000. They said the agency did not fully consider the drug's safety when used by girls under the age of 18 to end a pregnancy. Kaczmarek agreed with the anti-abortion groups. He wrote that the FDA ignored safety concerns when it approved mifepristone. His order also agreed with anti-abortion groups who said that a 19th-century law could be used to block sending abortion drugs through the mail. The Comstock Act was passed in 1873. It banned mailing birth control methods and things that could be used in an abortion. Since then, courts have narrowed the law. Some legal experts say the law has not been enforced since the 1930s. But anti-abortion groups turned to the law after the Supreme Court overturned the Roe v. Wade decision. In Oregon, U.S. District Judge Thomas Rice issued a different ruling. He ordered federal officials not to make any changes that would restrict the use of mifepristone. The ruling came from a legal action brought by a group of 17 Democratic Party-led states seeking to expand availability of abortion drugs. States led by Democratic Party governors are buying up drugs used in abortions to guarantee their availability. On Monday, the Justice Department appealed Kaczmarek's ruling. Also, more than 300 drug company officials signed an open letter calling for the Texas ruling to be struck down. They said the ruling limits the FDA's power and ignores years of scientific evidence of the drug's safety. Alliance Defending Freedom said in a call with the media early Thursday that it did not plan to ask the Supreme Court to become involved at this point. It remains unclear if the Supreme Court will take the case, but the appeal of Kaczmarek's earlier ruling will continue in the appeals court, whether or not all or part of it remains in effect. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Have you ever wondered how to read years in English? In today's Everyday Grammar, we will take a closer look at some ways to pronounce years in American English. The most common and easiest way to pronounce years is to say the first two digits as one number and the last digits as another two-digit number. Let's call this the first method. For example, I was born in 1987. Last year was 2022. When we read stories for VOA Learning English, we use this method of saying years in most cases. For years where the third digit is a zero, there are additional ways of saying the year. Americans often say O for the number zero. So a number like 1,801 would be 1801. The first Mother's Day celebration was held in Grafton, West Virginia, in 1908. Another less common way would be to say 1801. In American English, it is common not to say the and when talking about years. Some people might think it sounds out of date or very formal, but for most, it is just an extra syllable that is not necessary. If the year ends in two zeros, we can just say 100. So 1,700 would be 1,700. If the year ends in 10, use the first method. 1990 was an unusual year for our circle of friends. When the year ends in 30, say the year as one number. 1 followed by 30 is 1,000, and 2 is 2,000. I turned 13 years old in the year 2000. People often use the word year right before saying the numbers to show that they are talking about time and not talking about other things. With the start of the new millennium, the way that we say the years changed a little. There are two ways we can pronounce these years. We can pronounce them with the word thousand. Or we can use the first method, breaking the year into a pair of two-digit numbers. For the years 2001 to 2009, saying the year with the word thousand is most common. Between 2007 and 2008, the world experienced a terrible financial crisis. Barack Obama became the 44th president of the United States in 2009. After 2011, both methods are common. Amanda graduated from college in 2017. I worked at a local coffee shop in 2012. In VOA Learning English, we use the first method because it has one fewer syllable. Now, let's go further back in time to talk about the years before the year 1000. In American English, we often split three-digit years into sets. We usually say the first digit separately, and then the last two digits as a set. The year 492 was a leap year. In today's everyday grammar, we took a closer look at some ways to pronounce years in English. While the most common and easiest way is to say the first two digits and the second two digits as sets, as in 2023, this method is not the only way. We now know that the word O is used instead of zero for dates like 1901, when the third number is a zero. We also found out there are two ways to say years starting in 2001. How do you pronounce the years in English? Do you prefer one method over the other? Write to us in the comments or send us an email, learningenglish@voanews.com. I'm Faith Perlow.
Was this week's Everyday Grammar Report. Faith Perlow joins me now to talk more about the topic. Hi, Faith. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me back, Ashley.
This week, you talked about how we say years in American English and the different ways we pronounce them.
This was for sure an interesting one. I even learned a lot by writing it. And it got me thinking, do you remember those American Girl dolls that were popular in the 1990s?
Yes, each doll represented different historical periods in the United States.
Yes, There were different dolls for the different time periods in American history. So there was Kirsten, who was a Swedish immigrant and a pioneer. She represented the 1850s. Samantha, who represented the Victorian era in 1904. And Molly, who represented World War II America in the year 1943.
Did you have any American Girl dolls as a child?
I did. I had Felicity. When I was a kid, I was really into learning about the early United States. And Felicity represented the 1770s in Colonial Williamsburg in Virginia.
Are American Girl dolls still around? I mean, are they making new ones still?
They do. All different time periods and ethnicities, too. The most recent ones are a little funny. The historic time is the 1990s. Makes me feel super old.
Wow, me too.
The 1990s doesn't seem like that long ago, but I guess it was over 30 years ago.
Well, thanks again for being on today's show, Faith.
I'm always happy to be on the show, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Doug Johnson with Mario Ritter. We talk about the first 100 days of the administration of President Franklin Roosevelt. Roosevelt's inauguration speech in March of 1933 gave hope to millions of Americans. The new president promised to fight the Great Depression that was crushing the economy. His administration launched into action even before the inauguration ceremonies were finished. Back then, newly elected presidents were sworn into office in March instead of January. Roosevelt's aides began work even as he and his wife, Eleanor, watched the traditional inaugural parade. The lights of Washington's federal office buildings burned late that night. And not just on that night, but the next night, and the next night, too. The nation was in crisis. There was much work to do.
The first 3 months of Franklin Roosevelt's administration were an exciting time. Roosevelt got Congress to pass more pieces of important legislation during this short period than most presidents pass during their entire term. These 3 months are remembered today as the 100 Days. Sunday, March 5th, was the day after the inauguration. Roosevelt asked Congress to begin a special meeting later that week, and he ordered all the nation's banks to close until the economy improved. Roosevelt also banned the export of gold. Congress met on Thursday, as Roosevelt had asked. It passed everything that the new president wanted. Both the House and Senate approved Roosevelt's strong new banking laws in less than 8 hours. Roosevelt signed the bills into law the same day.
The next day, Friday, Roosevelt called on Congress to cut federal spending. Once again, Congress met and approved Roosevelt's request immediately. 2 nights later, Roosevelt spoke to the nation in a radio speech. His warm, powerful voice traveled to millions of homes. he gave many listeners the hope that they could once again trust their banks and political leaders. On Monday, Roosevelt called on Congress to make it legal to sell beer and wine and to tax those sales. At that time, there was a national ban on alcohol. But once again, Congress agreed. Roosevelt's success in passing these laws excited the nation. People across the country watched in wonder as the new president fought and won battle after battle.
Washington was filled with activity. The air was full of energy, like a country sky during an electrical storm. People from around the country rushed to the Capitol to urge the administration to support their ideas. Bankers came by the thousands to win favorable legislation. Experts of all kinds offered new ideas on how to rescue the economy. Ambassadors came from Britain, France, Brazil, Chile, China, and many other countries. They came to speak with Roosevelt on economic and diplomatic issues. And members of Roosevelt's Democratic Party arrived by the thousands. They came to seek jobs in the new administration. Americans watched closely what was happening in Washington, and they liked what they saw. They had voted for action. Now, Roosevelt was giving them action.
One of the most important areas of action for the new administration was agriculture. American farmers had been hurt more than any other group by the economic depression. The average income of American farmers had dropped in 3 years from $162 a year to just $48. Farm prices had fallen 55%. The buying power of the average farmer had dropped by more than half. Many farmers could not even earn enough money to pay for their tools and seed. The main cause of the problems for farmers was that they were producing too much. There was too much grain, too much meat, too much cotton. As a result, prices stayed low. The situation was good for people in cities who bought farm products, but it was a disaster for the farmers who produced those products.
Franklin Roosevelt attacked the problem by limiting production. His administration put a new tax on grain products. The tax increased their price and reduced demand. The administration paid cotton farmers to destroy some of their crops. And it bought and killed 5 million pigs to reduce the amount of meat on the market. It was a strange situation. Some Americans had trouble understanding the economic reason why food had to be destroyed so people could have enough to eat. But more officials agreed that this was the only way to limit supply, raise prices, and save farmers. The plan worked. Production quickly fell. Hot weather and bad harvests in 1933 and 1934 reduced the amount of grain even more. As a result, prices rose. Farm income increased 50% in 4 years.
administration also attacked the problem of falling industrial production. At the time of Roosevelt's inauguration, the production of American goods had fallen by more than half in just 4 years. Business owners reacted by cutting their costs. They lowered wages and reduced their number of workers. But these actions only reduced the number of people with enough money to buy goods. And so production went down further and further. Roosevelt created a National Recovery Administration that sought to gain the cooperation of businesses. Many business owners agreed to follow codes or rules, such as limiting the number of hours people could work. They also agreed to raise wages and stop hiring child labor. And they agreed to improve working conditions and to cooperate with labor unions. At the same time, Roosevelt created a Public Works Administration to provide jobs to unemployed workers. The federal government put people to work on building dams, bridges, water systems, and other major projects.
On monetary policy, Roosevelt and the Congress decided that the dollar should no longer be tied to the price of gold. Other action in Washington included a bill for homeowners that helped many Americans borrow money to save their homes. And a bank insurance bill guaranteed that Americans would not lose their savings. This insurance greatly increased public faith in the banks. Roosevelt and Congress created a Civilian Conservation Corps to put young men to work in rural areas to protect the nation's natural resources. These young men did things like plant trees and improve parks. They also worked with farmers to develop farming methods that help protect the soil against wind and rain.
One of Roosevelt's most creative projects was a plan to improve the area around the southern state of Tennessee. The Tennessee River Valley was a very poor area. Few farms had electricity. Forests were thin. Floods were common. Roosevelt and Congress decided to attack all of these problems with a single project. The new Tennessee Valley Authority built dams, cleared rivers, expanded forests, and provided electricity. It succeeded in helping farmers throughout the area, creating new life and hope.
The 100 days, the first 3 months of the Roosevelt administration, was a great success. One reporter for the New York Times observed that the change from President Herbert Hoover to Franklin Roosevelt was like a man moving from a slow horse to an airplane. Suddenly, the nation was moving again. There was action everywhere. Journalist Frederick Allen described the situation this way. The difference between Roosevelt's program and the Hoover program was sharp. Roosevelt's program was not a program of defense, but of attack. There was a new willingness to expand the limits of government. In most of the laws, there was a new push for the good of the common man. There was a new effort to build wealth from the bottom up rather than from the top down.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.